You're listening to Sound Poetry. I am your host, David Gilmore. This is Radio Tacoma, KTAH 101.9 FM, and this is Sound Poetry. And I would like you to meet today a poet from the Northwest, from Seattle, editor and publisher of anthologies of poetry, owner of the Five Willows Press, and he has published poetry since he was quite a young man. He is from China, from a village near Canton, Kun Woon.
This one's a little more cheerful.
You and I, we're going in the streets, are we?
Okay, this is more personal, more cheerful.
All right.
When you catch me riding, when you catch the wind, a warm breath is blowing and birds flock over the land. Though the political is absurd and men often pitch dirt, a raindrop of the good portends a brotherhood. Take this feather, my friend, it's from childhood. Fondly recall the days and nights in this undertaking we call life. When you and I are far awake, heavenly music we shall partake, and we shall laugh and dance as Providence bestow another chance.
That has some very interesting folk and ritual elements, the giving of a feather. You make of that what you can, but that definitely sounds like, a precious gift.
This is one of these poems where it's strictly an exercise, you know. It's quite popular now. People look at a painting and write a poem called
Ekphrastic
Poem. Yeah, okay. And I chose the painting, The Scream by Edwin Munch.
Okay.
1893.
Oh, yes.
The poem itself is called Under the Orange Sky, A Scream. 1. I beheld a man naked and bestial, guarded from the fjord by a flimsy wooden rail. In a most uncut voice that penetrated my being ear to ear. A voice seldom sought, a voice seldom heard, charged the air and wrapped me, mummifying me. It was not a friend I knew too well, finicky about his toiletry, and I'm a dog too old to wish it was a butterfly. 2. The light, the weather were all wrong, unasked for, as the sky flashed away, as if there was gold in the tundra. Evening encroaching, nature in revolt, a wave she sent permeated my very marrow. Years and years hence, I shall say, I was on that bridge where travelers cross from one extreme to the other extreme. I tell you this, but I'm no Lazarus.
Yeah.
I think you always have to be looking at the painting.
Well, most people know that painting, I think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
A lot of poets and artists could not be old enough to know that poem and not remember what it was, right?
Uh-huh. Okay.
And you do give some indication of it. When I've seen in movies someone who goes into an utter frantic scream,
uh-huh,
and the sound stops,
uh-huh,
there is no sound of the scream, just gesture of the open mouth and the rigor of the face,
uh-huh,
is enough. And this one is a kind of, it is a silent scream,
uh-huh,
but it seems to have some kind of lines, contour lines in the face that seem to reverberate outwards.
Yeah, like a waveform.
Yeah. And some people have made fun of that, by the way. I mean, you can be serious about art, but a lot of people made fun that the person shouldn't have been out on a windy night and have worn such a loose wig.
Uh-huh.
And that the person is showing,
uh-huh,
the shock.
Uh-huh.
Or the awe of having had his...
Well, you know the story, right? His sister was committed to a mental institute right before that.
Yeah. So you chose that one because you thought it was going to be Well, was Halloween coming up?
No, that was just a ekphrastic poem. I don't write those poems, and I'm not an expert on paintings. Uh-huh. But that one, the munch, I remember, the scream, I remember.
Did you think it was sort of minimalist, that it might be a good one to try to do in a spare skeletal description?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, there is something quite bare and mm-hmm. morbid about it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, of the books, are we reading any from some of the books, like The Rice Bowls, that was one of your...
That was a Modigliano book, so yeah. I don't know if there are too many poems in there.
Well, remember The Burden of Sanity? You read one already, but I recall one day mm-hmm. that you picked one out of here that I really thought was quite priceless, that had a fox in it.
The love poem. Yeah.
Yes, I think is mm-hmm. a really splendid poem with a strong image in it.
It was the feature poem in Poetry Depth Quarterly in California one time. Hmm. So lost. When the fox trots in the snow, the days of it, whiteness, blankness, so lost in it. As I am in the labyrinth of your hair, the contours of your body. So lost am I that my ancestors had no names, were unknowable. Like fractals, like sugar, sometimes in it and sometimes within it, in days, in weeks of it, the snow, the forgetfulness. The weather of our lives, what is disguised in it? The form of the fox, at his nose tip a snowflake, with the wind whipping the snowflakes around him, and he is so lost. So lost I am also in the realm of your voice. Your pleased smile, the love, is a gift, the necessary gift like a dowry. And so when the fox comes to the edge of a village to see smoke and steam rise up from the chimneys, the houses come alive, he then knows no childhood shame, nor any shame, and he dreams of warm, rough bread and hot ale, that through the years a fox could do worse. And a man, the infinitely sad creature, if not this, all this which he has done, which now seems to have been necessary, and to forsake this, he could do worse, a lot worse than to be lost, so lost in it, the blankness of the page, that somehow the aroma of bread can arise from it.
Yes, that's the one. Susan says to me once in a while, find that poem in the thin book and read that one again to me. I like that one. Somehow that really did resonate with her. The imagery of it, I think, is very strong. You know, when you have a lot of pictures like that, it stays with the person who is listening.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that listeners actually caught on to the love element in it through the metaphors. But I would like to mention that Kuhn has also written for some really unusual anthologies, one on the commemoration of the 400th anniversary of the death of Cervantes. And people in the Asian world or of Asian extraction were asked to write a poem in with the feeling of Don Quixote or the work of Cervantes in mind. And Kuhn had a couple of his poems accepted. And one is, I told you of the fragility of my love. I think that one would go really quite expressively next to the one that you've just read.
I've told you the fragility of my love. I've told you of the fragility of my love, and yet how it endures like a leaf pressed into a book. How the pain and how inappropriately the hate, like the Nagasaki and Hiroshima bombs, left a silence where no man can speak. It is this that is the fragility, my love. Knowing my awareness is pain, I leave you in my mind the many times of finger silence, when my mother's voice should drone, as the gentle hands release me to bed, or the smell of kerosene from the village lamp burn past the hour of moths, when we shut the window to village crickets, when the tender bamboo shoots, the new fragile leaves bud in the fragility of my love for you, as I want to travel blind with you as far into the night until the sun rises in Japan, and I will sail my junk into phantom waters. Yet my love endures like cloth flapping in the wind.
No really strong overt mention of Quixote or Cervantes there, but the feeling of a village scene with various things flapping. But what is the element there that you see most closely connected to the Quixote? Is it the Dulcinea, the love of Dulcinea, the traveling traveling for the sake of a maiden's love? Do you think you had that in mind, or what was it particularly that you...
I really don't know why they chose this poem. I think I sent about five of them, and...
But still, you find the imagery. I mean, it's a love poem, and what is Don Quixote if it's not a man who's idealized a love, an ordinary person of his village, cast her into the role of a princess, right? And that is an enhancement, hyperbole of some sort of romantic love affair from the knight's point of view.
I guess it would be the endurance of love. The love endures like cloth flapping in the wind. Cloth bends and flaps in the wind, but it never breaks like a flag. Like, it never breaks.
Right. Would you say that Don Quixote was a fragile hero, too?
Yeah.
He got beat up all the time. He got hit by windmills, he got beat up by different groups of people, until he was almost broken and bent, and almost not going to live.
Yeah, it reminds me of the French poet Candide, wrote about Candide. It's almost a satire.
Well, there's another one there that you did on behalf of this, that they chose for this anthology. I think it was not just the one. Why don't you read that? Because that one also is out of these normal texts that people can actually buy.
Yeah, this one has a direct reference to Don Quixote.
All right.
It's called De la Mancha. Okay. Paper was invented when a tree fell into the pond. Ink was invented when a berry dropped onto the ground. Don Quixote was born when Miguel Cervantes held the pen. But for 400 years, we still have not learned from this great man. What we invent that don't kill us, we have no utility. We double down on the most monstrous lethality. The practical thing is still to amass great wealth. Never mind environmental damage to our health. When the drones will roll out from the local police headquarters, we must stay home and watch the nightly news with a K, nightly news. Mm. Don Quixote and Sancho Panza, the pair from La Mancha, we count on you.
Yeah, so, yeah, in this one, you have brought that story into its place because the hero of the story is quite a troubled man. He's not a hero.
For me, it was a survival romanticism, yeah.
Right, but he has to struggle against all odds to surmount, things that don't even belong in his age. People could not understand anymore his nostalgia for that other code of chivalry. They thought he was nuts. And yet he had to surmount the world within that mentality.
Yes.
He wasn't going to give it up until the end, of course. Yeah. He did give it up at the end because he saw reason.
Yeah. On the Asian theme, I'm an immigrant. I left China when I was 11 years old. So this poem, as I imagine what an older person leaving China, leaving his village, leaving his loved ones behind. It's a very short poem. Okay. Heart, my most hurt, missing, my most you. Is this moon the same moon? This wilderness the same wilderness where I left you many immigrant years ago? Butterflies, dragonflies, and a noiseless, patient spider inhabit my verse as I spin out my love for you, while the muddy pearl empties in the South China Sea. My heart was left behind in the village yard, and will come back to answer its thumping call. Will come back for you in the succulent lychee fruit. Will consummate together its juice in meat.
Reminiscence of what you remember as a child in some respects right there. But you can't always say that, yes, it was my child's mind that I had when I was writing that. Yeah, it's very beautiful. So there's, you have written much that does have to do with your life and growing up. And we can't hear all of those, but are you at work now in some respects on working on your past in that way? You said perhaps you were.
The last conversation I had with you on that was I want to write some more cheerful poems about Aberdeen, Washington.
From your high school. Early, yeah, teenage years then.
Yeah. Now that I'm older and people I know went through the small town mentality and the close-mindedness, now they've seen more of the world. They're about to die. So the horizon is a little bit bigger now. So yeah. They and I could talk a little bit now, but I had to leave there to find myself. But now we can talk a little bit. I can go back to visit, family, friends. And,
yes.
So this poem is bicultural. The next poem is called Brick by Brick. There are two kinds of Tao, right? The Tao Jones average. In the Tao Te Ching, the Tao, the way, right?
Right.
Okay, this poem incorporates both kinds of Tao.
All right.
Brick by brick. 60 years now, are you still counting your village, brick by brick, flower by flower, and bee by bee? The house you were born in has collapsed. Your district is now different on the map. Even your mind is not the same. You have learned trick by trick. You know Dick, Jane, the children, Hank and Elaine. Forget about the old Tao. The new Tao is loss and gain. Forget about sunflowers. Don't record the muddy monsoons. Think soy futures, hog bellies, high towers and real estate. Let bamboo thickets and wine vats lay in ruins. The arms that rock you, dead now and buried without a tune. The hands that guide you across the village yards canard now without social parts. You can't go back in time to whistle archaic rhymes, absolutely, or in space age time. Why that grimace from memory? It was a trick you play on yourself that haunted you through the years. Truly, the pigs never liked to slop. Rooster didn't parade the tails. But cicadas on treetops did buzz like alarm clocks. You can still hurry, so it's not to miss your future.
That really gets rolling. You have a momentum in that one that is hustling along. It has a quick feel
pace
to it. Yes. And yet, in a way, I wanted to linger a little bit once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
And yet you hurried on. Yeah. Did you write this with the idea of being sort of in a breathless or a more vehement mood?
Well, the first line, 60 years now, so it's like Liberace playing the classical piano. In 1 minute, he plays a symphony. So in 60 years, he just, 20 lines of a poem.
It's a lot of time to catch up on there. Right. Yes, I've got it. I understand, of course.
Yeah, the next one is kind of like... Well, the next one is kind of metaphysical. The four modalities. Always wishing the world was something else, aren't you? The world is the world and consists of these things. Rain, snow, sun, and night. Nothing more to worry about. Rain pours like salt and you need it. Snow needs plowing and you got the job. Son, huh, we got one, and that's enough. And night is when you cry. When they shut you on the rain, something you don't want to forget. Drench, you go where they think better of you. Snow is a bit flecky, covering the world in forgetfulness, where battles been fought and men slain. In the vast white field, human appendages stick out. And sun, we love is warm, but it kills too, baking the mud and boiling the water away. Night is fearsome. No one can hold it back. Go gentle into it, regardless what invisible black hand of night faithfully had tossed to die.
The metaphysics of poetry are an awful lot of, a lot like the metaphysics of mathematics and, well, when metaphysics finds its way into philosophy. And I don't know if I ever understand what is going on metaphysically, just as I'm certain I don't know what's going on mathematically. And I'm quite sure that the philosopher isn't really trying to get me to understand what his hypothesis is. They seem to be hiding it. Mm-hmm. And so when you do a metaphysical one, are you trying to explicate sort of secret or uncanny things?
Well, they asked you, in what mode is this proposition true? People have to eat, right? So it's, in China, well, the mode is rice. People eat rice to live. In America, people eat bread. In Ireland, people eat potatoes. And so when you ask something was true or false, you have to ask in what mode, what manner is it true? Some things are true by virtue of this, the way it's said, like a bachelor's an unmarried man, right? So that's true by the dicto, by the form of the language. You know that better.
Well, that is an explanation that probably would dumbfound me if I'd had a couple of Qingdao beers and a little bowl of crispy Cheetos or something like that. But as I'm sitting here next to you, all I can say is I'm still a little dumbfounded about that because not a lot of the logic or the logic of math, or none of that makes sense to me because I'm so concerned with the non-reasoning aspect of things these days, reading poetry, for example.
I mean, like we experience like the four seasons, right?
Sometimes.
Summer, heat, cold, rain, sleep.
Okay, whatever. All right. Yes, I could name them.
So these four modes, sort of like a place you are, a situation you're in, the four modalities, the four aspects of life, right? Rain, snow, sun, night. Sun is absolutely necessary, but it also kills. Night is when you cry alone, it's sad time, and that's also when you die, and nobody can help you. Snow affects everybody. It blankets history. It kills people. Covers up everything. Rain is something that tests whether your friends are your friends or not. When you all drench up, you knock on the door. Do they turn you away or do they take you in? Well, these are the kind of things you can meditate on about life, right?
Well, the whole thing is you shouldn't have used the word metaphysics. That's what threw me.
Most people believe something is true or false, but they don't also think about, is it always true? Is it always false? In what situations is it true? And what is true by the statement, by the way it's stated, that's always true. Some things are true factually. Some things are stated true because the language use makes it always true. A is equal to A. That's always true. Right?
Let's hope we got the language to help explain it.
So we have a de dicto, de re in metaphysics.
Well, there we are. I think that is a wonderful discourse and dissertation with mathematical hints and ruminations in it that you can't help but take in and wonder about just a little bit. Even if you're not aware of what metaphysical is, Kuhn, it's been a real pleasure to have you read so many poems. Mm-hmm. The one anthology that has the Cervantes poems in it is called Quixotica or Quixotica, Poems East of La Mancha. And this was done at the time of the 400th anniversary of Cervantes dying. Mm-hmm. And well, it's done with the support of Consul General of Spain in Hong Kong and Macau. Mm-hmm. So most of them are by Asians, and you'll see that Don Quixote meant a lot to people all over the world, especially in the Pacific East.
I got two short poems to read, maybe.
This has been quite wonderful that we've been able to read so many. Kuhn is going to read a couple more that are the finale of our program today.
Okay. The power of a stamp. The bulkiness of words isn't a burden, for words have promised a journey by the power of a stamp. After midnight, I become weary and old tunes haunt me. A quarter of a century ago, our galaxy is all we knew, and too comforting. But since, the entire universe has expanded. My keyboard is the only thing that stays the same in this relentlessly emitting words into cyberspace. But I prefer to send you my typed letters, and they will travel via human hands. My human contact facilitated by the postman, and he takes the same care to drop my letter into your mailbox. In whatever cycle the universe is in, whether it's wash or dry, my letters are steady because they're composed by my heart. And though you're only half a city away, my words are almost as good as legal tender. In my necessary pauses, you can see that my heart flutters for you, as my inspirations are the result of absence.
Yeah, there's a lot of concern these days about the death of handwriting.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Also, the return of handwriting. They're trying to get cursive back, but this is the second time in 2 weeks that somebody has read something to me about handwritten letters.
Oh, yeah.
And the thing that comes across with the handwriting is that, first of all, the person who received something in a letter that was handwritten really thinks it's a big deal. Mm-hmm. It is unusual to make it something special. Mm-hmm. And when we write, of course, I don't know about you, but I'm not so practiced at my hand as I was when I was a schoolboy. Uh-huh. But now, if I write the word the twice in the same line, it's probably not the same shape of the in the first one and the last one. So there's an individuality that comes throughout the words as you put them down. Mm-hmm. And this is what helps to make it something that a person will really look at to decode it, to decipher this, right? And decipherment is gone by the wayside for the most part. Mm-hmm. Belongs to mostly ancient languages and codes. Uh-huh. But you're writing about the importance of this connection that is from person to person. Yeah. There's a lot of touch all along the way.
So the final poem would be on nostalgia. That's just what we're talking
that
about.
That'll fit in with this one, all right.
Handwritten letters, nostalgia.
Right.
So very short, and this is autumn. Mm-hmm. So it's autumn nostalgia. Autumn's twirling leaves serves up a plate of nostalgia, not unlike a late meal in a 3-star restaurant. Mm. This is the season I'm a rudderless boat, navigating the brittle streets under mercury lamps. The leaves of shades and shapes drift behind me in all the places I have been, where once I rode the wind, composed my own stability, as the last of sunlight shafted the neat piles of November.
Nostalgia isn't all sadness. It isn't all sadness, but it is a desire for return to something. And when you wrote about the loneliness of having a meal by one's lonesome in a 3-star restaurant, which is a fine restaurant, I mean, there's something dignified about it. You're going to be formal, perhaps, in the way you appreciate the food and play with it by yourself. But I think in a poem like that, one of the thoughts that I did have was that I thought it'd be very nice to find you having dinner when I came in the door and I was going to eat by myself. So I'd go over and say, Kun, let's talk poetry. And you would probably not be averse to that. Mm. It would be a nice way of making that nostalgic loneliness less lonely.
Mm-hmm.
Kun, I can't thank you enough. This has been really a splendid group of poems that you've read, with lots of very, very deep thoughts in them. I think that if anyone has heard the poems that from the previous interviews in the archives of KTAH and the Sound Poetry, you'll have quite a large compendium of poems by which to know how Kun works and what he feels about the world he lives in. And he is thriving, and the world around seems to be falling in ruins, as the word appears a few times in his poetry, but there's an awful lot of building up that goes on too, emotionally, in feeling, in the qualities and values that make life interesting. And I thank you so much for presenting those.
Thank you, David. It's been an opportunity and a pleasure.
This is Sound Poetry, Radio Tacoma, KTAH 101.9. I've been your host, David Gilmore, with Kun Woon of CIT.